This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
In 1973, the New York City Police Department created a hostage negotiation team.
It's not up against the gun. It's up against the man's mind.
When you're defusing a human bomb, it's the same as when you're taking apart a real bomb. If you skip a step, it's going to blow up right in your face.
Talk to Me tells the high-stakes true story of the world's first hostage negotiation team. It changed policing forever. Talk to Me.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. Welcome to CarCast. Matt Pearl's Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea, over there.
Hello.
Hey, man. What's going on?
Just moving stuff around. It's been a busy weekend. Went over and, I don't know if I told you yet, so I went over and I picked up the Mustang Mach 1, my 2021 Mustang Mach 1. And then we were doing it, we did a bunch of work on it for SEMA. We had it at SEMA this year.
Mm-hmm.
We got the tune done on it, so I went and picked it up and drove it home. So my Mustang has a twin turbo kit on it now.
Can't leave it alone.
Leave it alone. Well, to be fair, I haven't done anything to the Ford Lightning.
Yet. Right. So, twin turbo with intercoolers. I don't know. I can't remember the after cooler and the intercooler.
Yeah, it's got
Are we still doing that? Are we still doing after coolers? I even know what an after cooler is as I think about it.
Yeah, it's just where it is in the
chain,
but you got to have some sort of cooling.
You got to cool it before it goes into the turbos, right? Out of the turbos before it goes
into the engine.
Right, into the plenum or whatever it is.
So this was a kit. The company's called Hellion Turbo, and they were trying to come up with a kit that could pass emissions.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not a lot of room. So the catalytic converters, you can imagine VA car catalytic converters are going to come right off the headers, basically.
Right.
And you can't change the cats and you can't change the location of the cats. So all the space they have to work with is basically between the engine block and that cat, basically the length of your exhaust manifold or your header. That's all the space you have.
Mm-hmm.
So they came up with.
So they tuck it inside.
That's where they do it. It's they're mounted down low on the sides of the engine by the bell housing, mm-hmm. right where the cats move up. They take the exhaust headers off. They make their own header that has the turbo right on the end of it. And then that turbo has a V-band flange welded on it that attaches to the catalytic converter. So it's right there. It's like turbos coming right off the engine block.
So, exhaust manifold into turbo, turbo into cats.
Yeah, and it's small package.
And then through cats into
the stock exhaust. From the cat's back, it's all basically. I mean, I have Magnaflow mufflers and stuff, but that's all stock. So the EPA looks at it and goes, "Well, you didn't change anything with the exhaust, and you didn't change anything with the fuel system, really, the carbon filters and all that other stuff, right?"
Mm-hmm.
It's all unchanged. But the turbos are mounted low, like next to the bell housing. I have a K member, the suspension is attached on. There's tabs welded on it and holds the turbos.
Mm-hmm.
And then just going forward along the frame rails, I got tubes going to an intercooler in the front. And mm-hmm. the top of the intercooler goes into the engine,
mm-hmm.
right? Very, very simple. It's really not wildly complicated.
How much boost are we running?
We haven't measured the boost, and I haven't put it on the dyno yet, but it's not a lot of boost, 6-7 pounds of boost.
Mm-hmm.
I still think it's going to make 750 at the crank, mm-hmm. 700 at the crank.
What's the displacement?
It's 5-liter Coyote engine.
Just five.
Over. Yeah.
Okay. Well.
It runs great. It's not uncontrollable. The power, you know, you've driven a lot of turbo cars, your racing cars. You roll into it and the power comes on. You start to hear those turbos spool up, which is fantastic because it's so easy to supercharge these cars. There's so many kits. They all work great. But doing the turbos, have you said for so many years, it's like it seems like it's free horsepower. You don't have to turn the blower with the belt and lose 5 horsepower to get 50 horsepower or lose 30 to get 100 or whatever. It's just like it's there. The packaging is great. And because Mustangs don't do this, it sounds unlike any other Mustang.
Yeah, I was going to say it's good for the sound. It's quiet. I told you a million years ago when I went to Riverside Raceway for the Times Grand Prix of Endurance. Now, Adam, you went to a race as a young person? Not with my dad.
Yes. Like, how'd you get there?
No.
What friend was going there?
My friend.
You sat in the back of someone's mini truck and got a ride out there.
My friend's stepdad, Jim, was into it, had a VW bus. And we drove it out there. Okay. And it's funny. It was like 1980, 1981. It was 81, 82. It was kind of around the time Rolf Stumlin actually died in a 935 out there. But I was I always remember very vividly, I think it was a 6-hour. It was fun. They used to have it. You'll see the Riverside Times Grand Prix of Endurance or whatever. It used to be on the calendar. If you go look up the race charts, oh, Paul Newman did it in 83 and all that kind of stuff. They had a run, I don't know, 20 years or 25 years or whatever. But I just remember as a young guy who loved cars but just knew nothing about cars, I remember like kind of standing on the bridge in the middle of the back straightaway or somewhere. And the RX-7 would come down the straight, and it was just screaming.
Yeah.
You had to hold your ears. It was so loud. And then the 935s were coming. And the 935s were going twice as fast as the RX-7. They weren't making sound.
Yeah.
And I remember at the time kind of going like, this guy's going twice as fast with half the sound. What's going on? And it was the turbos, you know?
It's the turbos.
And so I always sort of loved the turbos. The other thing about the turbos for me is, yes, I'm an efficiency nut, and it seems like free power.
Yeah.
Versus pulling off the crank. And I get you can make plenty of horsepower with a supercharger, and arguably cheap horsepower. I mean, it's just whatever you did to your Mustang would cost a lot more than bolting a – just taking a supercharger and bolting on top of the engine.
Yeah, it's this is a pricey
right
pitch.
But it's cool. It's yeah, much cooler. It's and then the cool. the other thing is and you know, people can tweet me wrong, but other than some old, you know, 30s, maybe 40s, 30s, 40s, 20s Bentley, what supercharged race cars are there, you know, road cars? How many Le Mans cars, how many cars that entered Le Mans after the year of 1950 had a supercharger on them? And I'm going to go with pretty much none.
I didn't even know if there was a rule for it, because even if you went to Le Mans in a Corvette, like, you know, like, oh, all the arrows from the, you know, Z06 or the ZR1. I'm like, yeah, but the ZR1's a supercharged car of the last however many years. They don't run that. I just don't even think there's
you're
a
talking
rule
about modern
it.
Day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think, and Ben can look it up, but I don't think there's been any supercharged cars at Le Mans.
Seen a lot of Bentleys, but that's about
That's what I started with. Bentley, like in the 30s, Ben, maybe into the, yeah. But past that, no. And
And street cars had them. Jag has a bunch of supercharged cars. Mercedes.
Well, you're talking modern.
Yeah. Yeah. But even their modern racing versions of those cars, no supercharger.
This is a very good question. So then why would Mercedes and Jag and or Corvette with their top-of-the-line supercharge had the most horsepower street cars,
yeah,
then go race at Le Mans and get rid of the supercharger?
Right.
Well, that just means they don't work well in that condition.
Right. I mean, they're going to say there wasn't a class for it. There's nobody else running superchargers. But I think if enough people said, we all want to run superchargers, then there would be a class for it.
Yeah, and I would probably...
Now, they're not going to turbo, though. They're not saying, oh, I'm running my Jag with a supercharger, but for racing, I'm doing a turbo version. They just go naturally aspirated.
Right. So if at Le Mans, it was nothing but turbos and naturally aspirated, and I would use that then as sort of the benchmark of here's the most efficient you need to be. It'd probably be a fuel issue, too, with supercharging versus turbocharging, fuel consumption issue. So what I'm saying is given that as a yardstick to measure what we're trying to do here, then I would conclude that I would rather have a turbocharged car on the street than a supercharged car. But again, space and EPA and price especially is now going to come into effect.
I'm curious to know, because there's been some testings years ago with Corvettes where they put a turbo on a Corvette and just cruising, keeping your foot out of the gas, but just cruising on the highway, and the efficiency of the turbos improved their fuel mileage.
Oh,
instead
of
harmed it.
Oh, yeah.
We have a very short clip. The clip goes fast, and there's two sections. One is the car coming at you, and then it flips to from the camera from the rear. So two different sounds. But here's the car, what it sounds like.
Is this your car?
This is my car. I didn't put this together. Galpin Autosports did this quickly. Okay. I'll do more videos and stuff and walk through. But he'll just play the clip. Go ahead and hit it. That first half with the car coming at you, you hear those turbos come on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's not a lot of RPM. It's 3,000, maybe less than 3 when you start to really hear those things start
What's
to
What's the red line on that engine?
7,600.
Really?
70.
Healthy.
Yeah. Yeah, those Coyote motors are fantastic.
That's not an overhead cam.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. It's a dual overhead cam.
So
it's two
cams or four cams?
Four cams.
Wow.
Yeah,
look,
those Coyote engines are fantastic.
Oh,
so this
fucking euroed out.
This is what I was telling you.
So you got
you.
Aluminum block, aluminum heads, four cams, and two turbochargers.
Yes.
Thank you.
It's the Mustang you've been waiting for.
No, that's the engine that I wanted in the 2005 Ford GT.
Yes. This setup would have been
or
fantastic.
Naturally aspirated. I did not want the supercharger belted on there because it's not a Le Mans. Ford GT is nothing but an homage to Le Mans.
Right.
But then you assholes strapped a supercharger onto the top of it and fucked the whole thing up for me.
Yeah.
So I went out and got a DB9 that's worth $37,000 right now at the same time I could have bought at the exact same sticker price. I could be sitting on $425,000, but you guys made me get the Jag.
Put off by the supercharger. By the way, they fixed the problem in the next Ford GT, right? They still did the six cylinder, but they did it in turbos, and now they're trading for $1.3 million. But yes, the right combination now, the overhead cam, and with this car, look, the GT500, you drove one at Speed Vegas, and that one was breathed on a little by Shelby American. But, you know, dual overhead cam, V8 engine, you know, supercharger.
Independent rear.
Well, mine has that too.
I'm saying no leaf springs.
No solid axle.
Yeah,
it wasn't a leaf spring for a long time, but it was a four link.
They Eurofied the car.
Yeah.
That's it.
And the GT500 is 760 horsepower. It's fast. It's got the paddle shift DCT.
No antenna on the fender.
No antenna on the fender. But I was like, I don't know how long we're going to keep cool supercars are going to have a manual transmission if we even have any left. And when the Mach 1 came out, it already had the upgraded Tremec transmission, right? The normal transmission that are in the Mustangs and stuff were a little on the weak side. And when they did the Shelby GT350, the modern day one, it had the upgraded Tremec. The Mach 1 came with the Tremec, and I was like, great. So can we build, instead of just buying the supercharged GT500, can we get the same power, but now with turbos and a manual?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we built.
All right, let me tell you about electric e-bikes. I love these things. Every time I come home, I'm like, where's Sonny's out on his electric e-bike?
Nice.
Although Olga technically just says he's out on his bike, but he's out on his electric e-bike.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, man, I'm on those things. Every Sunday we go to watch football over at the warehouse. It's about 3 miles from the house. And I time it.
Mm-hmm.
10 minutes. Ten minutes is what it takes. And when I drive it from my house to the warehouse, 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But it's the same amount of time just because I'm not on the freeway. I'm just taking sort of surface streets and obeying all the posted speed limits and stuff. But electric bike, man, I just dice through that neighborhood.
Yeah.
Sunday night.
You just do that straight shot right down.
I go the back way around whatever the park is over there. And then I also do a thing. There's this slow and steady uphill toward the coming back up to Foothill. And they're on a Sunday, you know. And there are guys out there riding their 10 speeds.
Yeah.
And
when I
pass them on the left, I always pedal.
Oh, you pedal.
I want them to think.
Think it's all muscle.
It's all me. That's all quad,
yeah.
baby.
Yeah.
This I stuff, I'm telling you, the thing folds and you can throw it in the back of the SUV. Like, you know, yeah, we'll ride over there and it'll start raining or something. I'll chuck it in the back of the SUV. It's way less than the competition. And you can get them as low as $133 per month. Plus, you lower your gas costs and your carbon footprint as well. And they got the new XP trike, which it's fully foldable, fully assembled, electric tricycle. I haven't even seen this one yet. Now I'm excited. You can cover up to 45 miles on a charge, up to 28 miles per hour, which is zooming when you're on that thing. And it's got rear rack support for everyday rides and longer trips. It's just the future. So electric e-bikes, love these guys, right, Matt?
Yeah, get out there and find adventure with electric e-bikes. Visit electricebikes.com to learn more. That's electricebikes.com.
All right, well, in breaking Leno news,
yeah,
I talked to him last night.
How's he doing?
He's doing okay.
He's got the wind taken out of his sails. I think emotionally he's a little...
No, he loves it.
He's good? Yeah.
He's good. But, so, I said to him, well, what, you know,
really happened?
The explanation was, yeah, sort of what happened. You know, you hear, oh, he hit a clothesline.
Yeah.
You know, and...
Into the parking lot, there's a wire, and nobody hung a flag. It's like, that all seems weird.
Yeah, someone hung a wire.
Like...
Yeah, right. So, and, all right, so... And then the biggest question that I had, of course, is what happened to the bike? Because if you just got pulled off the bike, then the bike just ghost rode and fucking could have been pretty damaged, you know?
Yeah.
And he doesn't ride, you know, mopeds. He rides bras or bros or
and
bras.
Indians and just like crazy stuff.
Super expensive stuff. So... I call him. Now, the good news is he's getting a lot of material out of it. Because I said to him, I was calling him about something else. But I, you know, I had to ask, like, what's going on? Jay's funny because Jay's old school. You know what I mean? So if you send him a text, he'll text back, call me.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't want to fucking text back and forth. So anyway, I called him last night. And I said... We were talking about, I was trying to arrange a tour for a friend of mine to come by and look at the shop, you know, and of course he's like, yeah, sure. But I said, what happened with the bike? And so first off, he's getting material. He goes, 71-year-old driving an 83-year-old motorcycle. What could go wrong?
And that's like, all right.
Yep. All right. Then, so I said, so what happened? He said, well, I was out riding the Indian, and I started smelling gas, and like it was leaking, and I guess he's keen to that now. So I said, I went to a parking lot to like turn around, cut through a parking lot or something. And, you know, guy had strung a wire. Now, like, I've sort of like strung a wire, and he was like, yeah, like kind of one of those don't come into this driveway wires, you know, like people.
Yeah.
You'll see it up in the hills a lot around here. People put a chain or wire or something because people are turning around in their driveway or something.
But the chain's usually like bright white or yellow, and it's got a sign hanging from it. Or the wire, you're right, the wire is weak sauce.
You're right. So somebody strung a wire that seemed, anyway, pulled him off his bike. Broken collarbone, cracked ribs, two cracked kneecaps. And I said,
did he say, did it hit him like in the chest or did it like hit the front of the bike?
It like hit him in the chest and pulled him off. And so I said, oh, so, you know, you're really sore or whatever. And then he proudly told me he played a gig in Arizona 2 days later, and he never missed a gig.
Yeah.
He never missed a gig.
He was at Hermosa Beach the next
night.
That's
what he explained to me. He told me all that stuff. And then I said, cracked ribs and cracked kneecaps. I was like, you're really sore, but you didn't have to go under the knife or anything, you know. And he goes, oh, no, my collarbone was snapped, like comically. Like he said, I'll show you a picture. It looks like a cartoon. I said, oh. So I said, they had to cut him open and, you know, fix the collarbone. I said, oh. And then I said, how's the bike, Jay? What happened to the bike? Because I'm picturing the bike ghost riding and, you know, cartwheeling or something, hitting a car or whatever. I said, what happened to the bike? He said, I was riding the one with the side hack.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah, the side hack Indian, which we're looking at now, which no one said in any of the reporting because no one gives a shit, but I give a shit. I pictured a $150,000 vintage Indian being ghost ridden and then wobbling and then smacking into something.
And something traumatic, like hit a speed bump and flies off the edge of a cliff and
bursts into flames.
And
he said the bike just coasted. Hit a bush and hit a building, but the bike's okay.
Bike's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're off the throttle.
Right.
And it's
and it's a side hack.
Right.
So
I would have thought it would have turned.
It did something.
Yeah.
It didn't. Once I found out it was a side hack, I was like, oh, okay. So the bike never fell over.
Yeah.
It just coasted, hit a bush, and hit the side of a building. But he wasn't going 70 miles an hour. He's probably going 15 miles an hour, whatever, but pulled off the bike. It's also a weird bike to go tooling around in alone.
Yeah, his bikes are all weird, so it's not weird
for him. Side hack?
With nobody in the side. Although, I guess if somebody was in the side, they probably would have got right across the mouth with that wire.
Yeah.
If he got it kind of in the chest, they would have got it like right in the eyes.
Yeah. So
the bike is okay. Jay's
okay.
When did he the surgery that day? And then the next night he was doing comedy, or did he wait? You know, because Jay, I wouldn't surprise me and go, oh, I was doing comedy for 2 days, so I did my surgery on Wednesday. So I just walked around with a broken collarbone for 4 days.
He was just very happy to tell me that he did not miss a spot and that he was at Hermosa the night before, you know, or last Sunday. Jay. He loves it. He loves telling me that shit.
Yeah, listen, I'm glad he's okay. I'm sure it's way more painful than he's led to believe. And I know his show is Jay Leno's Garage, the TV show is done. Maybe he's still going to do the YouTube shows, but he still has his game show. By the way, everybody was writing, they're going, oh, his show got canceled. I was like, but he's not. He's still got his game show on Fox. He's still working. He's not slowing down, really.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, he is when the cable hits him. That slowed him.
Yeah.
All right, let me tell you about Snap-on. Today's episode is brought to you by the makers and the fixers of Snap-on. We're makers and fixers over here.
Leno is.
Yeah. He's fixing his collarbone. It's what keeps the world moving. And you can find them in factories and repair shops, roads and rails, building, maintenance, everything. Makers and fixers. They're the backbone. They're the collarbone of the automotive, aviation, agriculture, mining, marine, and the military as well. And I got my guys, Sean, over here right now, actually firing up the car, putting air in the tires, moving it to another locale. These guys know how to do stuff.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about the makers and the fixers. And it's not just a job, it's a calling. And they want to hear from you so you can share your story at makersandfixers.com/carcast. And you can check out the makers and fixers on Instagram. So tip of the cap to all you makers and fixers over there from Snap-on. And again, makersandfixers.com/carcast. What else you got we thinking about here?
You know, I was I know you guys are going to be digging more into the Dan Gurney doc, right?
Mm-hmm. We're into that. Yeah.
It's on the list of new projects over here with the Chassis Media guys, and it just I was just cruising around on the Gooding website, and I saw some cars pop up at the Amelia Island auction.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be the last time Gooding does the Amelia.
Mm. Oh, it is?
Yeah, there's been some transfer of ownerships. I think Hagerty bought the Amelia Island event.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to rename it the Amelia,
mm-hmm.
but they own the Broad Arrow auction company.
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
I think, which they ended up buying fully, I believe. So,
mm-hmm.
So there's going to be some changes there. So it's going to be kind of exciting. But I saw the 66 Gurney car, the AAR Gurney Eagle MK1 pop mm-hmm. up. And I think there was only a handful of them, maybe like three of them. I believe this is the VIN 1.
This is an F1 car, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's not an Indy car. I was fooled for a minute because when you think Gurney and you think Eagle, you think Indy. But this is an F1 car from 66, which...
Ben can check the notes on it.
It doesn't look much different back then than an Indy car. F1 and Indy cars in the 66, I don't know.
So this is an F1 car.
Yeah.
And there was four of them.
I don't know there's much of a technology difference either. You know what I mean? I mean, now there's a big difference between F1 and Indy, right?
Yeah.
In 1966, I don't know, fuel capacity? You know what I mean? Like, what was the difference between an F1 and an Indy car?
This is a 2.7 liter.
Mm-hmm.
A dual overhead. It's a dual overhead inline four, and he's got two Webers on it, 250 horsepower, five-speed. And the four-wheel hydraulic disc brakes.
Yeah. I wonder if the Indy version would have a five-speed, and I know it sort of makes sense that it would because you'd want that top gear. On the other hand, I somehow feel like they just have a four-speed with a super long fourth gear or something. I don't know. Maybe a granny gear in the first gear to get out of the pits. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know why. But look, here's the whole point. Gurney is, you know, catching on. Like, people are like, oh, that guy's a legend. You know, he's a legend. And some of the guys, like we spoke last week about Shelby. Shelby died and everyone went, and his stuff didn't even pop. You know what
right.
I mean? It just kind of flatlined for a decade. Now it's moving, right? But Gurney died and people are like, nah, this guy's a legend and he's a artist and this is his painting. You know, this car.
Yeah.
But he
wasn't quite the marketer, so it's not like he got saturated like Shelby kind of did.
Mm-hmm. But Gurney, Indy cars, and again, the Gurney F1 car, which ostensibly could be the same as the Indy car in 1966. What'd they estimate? 3 to 4 million?
3 to 4 million. And so the car was restored and with the intention of doing some vintage racing. So they got another engine, and they have a rebuilt engine in this car, but this auction comes with the original engine that's untouched. because they didn't want to like risk breaking it, because of course it's going to break in vintage racing. And it's rebuildable, but there was an opportunity, to do another engine. So I don't know. This thing is a cool piece.
It's a cool piece. You know what I was thinking about? Doing a nut and bolt restoration on this car would probably be cheaper than doing a nut and bolt restoration on a 72 Pantera.
Yeah, there's only – all there is nut and bolts for this thing. There's not much else.
No. I mean, in a weird way. It's beautiful, and the gurney colors were great, and it's a beautiful little car, and I hope it goes to a good home. But that is interesting. There's also, I'm looking here. There's a Porsche 962. It says 1978, but I'm gonna go with 88 because I know more about cars than whoever made this, which is. Porsche did not have a 962C in 1978.
Right. So that's just a typo. It's 87.
87 or 88 or whatever.
Yeah, it's an 87.
Oh, it's
a Kremer 962C. Mm-hmm. The estimate's 850,000 to 1 million.
And it came in fourth overall, Le Mans 87. Oh, mm-hmm. Okay. There it is. Now I know it's 87. But I don't know. Feels a little light for a car that had a couple of years at Le Mans.
Yeah.
As I was reading about it.
So it's interesting because this car was only raced twice in its existence, and it was both at Le Mans in 87 and 88. It placed fourth overall and then eighth overall. So it did finish.
Yeah. two complete Le Mans. And it's beautiful. And I've talked to guys who drive Porsches, and they basically said 962s easy to drive. Like it handles well. It's balanced. It's a mid-engine. It's a mid-engine car, not a rear-engine car. You know, and they've said like, oh, these things handle. They drive well. Like they're pretty smooth. Like they're like a nice to drive kind of car. If you don't mind, I guess sitting on the right, except for the shifter's on the right, so it's not too weird. Right.
Right. So you're like a little, you're kind of off center, but much more in the center of the vehicle, just the cockpit itself. And then you're just kind of off center a little bit.
Yeah.
It would be a different kind of driving experience, I would think.
Yeah. But I think you'd get used to it pretty quick with the stick on the right, like sort of in the door panel almost. But it's kind of cool. And this thing did two tours and finished Le Mans twice. This thing's covered some miles at Le Mans. I think it's somewhere around 3,000 miles on a completed race. I mean, you sit on the right.
You kind of sit on the right, and you shift on the right close to the door.
Yeah. And I guess it depends on conditions like rain and weather and stuff like that. But
this is a nicely preserved car. Maybe it was restored. It's a nice piece. The 962s are cool looking cars. This is a great vintage racer car. I just thought that was kind of interesting. And then you saw my list, the 77, the Porsche 934, mm-hmm. also in that 800 to 1.1 million range.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 934 and a half. I guess it says 934 slash.
Yeah, it's 934 and a half.
And is that and that's got Le Mans history, or
that
does
one,
it?
That's a good question. That one, we'd have to.
And is it sponsored by anyone? I couldn't really. It's got a little Brumos in it, but I don't think it's Brumos, because if it was Brumos, they'd want more for it.
I don't know that it's a Le Mans car. It was in Trans Am and IMSA events. It ran Sebring, 12 hours of Sebring. I don't know that it has a lot of racing history. It just
Does it have a sponsorship or a livery? This kind of looked like it was white to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that.
But it is one of the last 10 factory built 934 and a halves.
The Kremer.
Delivered to Vasek Polak.
Oh. The Kremer 962. If you could get that car for under $1 million, I think that's a good investment. And especially if you want to go out and do some events in it, I think they're pretty drivable, so I'm told. And, you know, it's got a six-cylinder twin turbo, but it's kind of mid-mounted.
I thought the 934.5 was a cool car because not a famous one that's a high dollar, but probably qualifies for vintage racing and gets you into a badass car. And they got the fans on the wheels and stuff.
Like
they did it all kind of right up. Let me tell you guys about O'Reilly real quick. O'Reilly's bonus. O'Reilly's auto reward auto parts O rewards. It's O Rewards Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. You can shop in-store or online to get points and rewards sent straight to your phone or inbox. You can get two, three, almost four times points on selected purchases. And that'll get you even faster to your total points goal. You'll receive $5 reward for every 150 O Rewards points that you earn. If you're already an O Rewards member and you're not receiving your rewards, just add your email or your phone number to your account and you'll get a $10 reward just for updating your existing account info. Sign up is quick and easy. It's at O'ReillyAuto.com or in store. That's O'ReillyAuto.com or just pop into the store.
We love O'Reilly. All right. So there's also Lamborghini's Lero that they say is fully restored, and they're looking to get between 400 and 500K for it. But I'm worried. I don't think they're going to get to that mark, even with a beautiful restoration.
Yeah, it's a cool car.
It's a cool car.
Yeah, I like the lines of the Lero. It kind of sits back, kind of squats on its ass a little bit. But it's got the long nose, and it just swoops down just enough in the back.
Yeah, it's a little squatty. Mm-hmm. A little slabby. It's a little slabby, but it's a big V12 front engine touring car, and it's a cool piece. I've had a few of them, and I like them. And they've always been kind of undervalued, and maybe they're starting to make their move. The cars that are going bananas are the Countaches.
Yeah.
Countaches hanging around, you know, 200 grand, 250 for just kind of a million years. They just never really.
Right.
Now it's 650, 750, 8, you know, sort of all day long.
Like, yeah.
They just popped hard.
They've been moving 2 to 3 times what they were not that long ago.
Right. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what a full. So you never, well, not never. You rarely see a fully restored Islero because an Islero was in the past was, you know, $150 to $250 somewhere in that thing, and to do a full resto on a car like this is $250. So when the resto is more than the sticker, then what are we doing here?
Yeah.
But now that the prices have gone up into the 275 to 350 kind of Islero range. It's starting to make sense.
But I think to your point, I mean, Countaches are going up, so they're getting a little out of the price range. That Mura SV that we saw a couple weeks ago, you know, 3.5, that's going up. So I know this is not an Islero S, but, you know, be great if it gets it. Good for the Islero.
No, I'm rooting for it. And Mark Gargos has one that I sold him. So I'm always rooting for it because nobody wants to say, you know, no one wants a good friend where I go, I sold you an anything for 300 grand 5 years ago. It's worth 275.
Yeah, you know, right. Yeah,
I want to go. It's worth 425.
Right. Right. And because you don't have one right now, might as well root for Mark's car, and hopefully this one will go for big money.
I'm very magnanimous that way. I'm rooting for Mark's car. So I'm going to be in West Palm Beach, Florida, coming up at the Improv. That'll be Thursday doing a stand-up, and then it's off to Baltimore Friday and Saturday doing McGoobie's Joke House, doing live stand-up there as well, right? That's this is that this Thursday? Yeah, I guess so, right?
This will be airing this Friday. That will be next Friday and Saturday.
Oh, okay. Next Friday and Saturday is when I'll be at Magoobies. Anyway, go to adamcarolla.com for all the live shows, because I'll be in Vegas and I'll be in Naples, Turlock, Fresno, Kansas City, Oklahoma, Monterey. Just go to adamcarolla.com for all that. What do you got, Moderator?
That's a big lineup you got there. A lot of work. Just follow me on social media at Moderator and we'll get some stuff posted.
So, until next time, Adam Carolla for Matt, the Moderator, DeAndrea saying keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
All month long on Pluto TV, stream the biggest Tyler Perry movies free. Watch your favorites like Madea's Witness Protection and Madea's Big Happy Family. Join Tyler Perry as he goes on a couples retreat with Sharon Leal in Why Did I Get Married? Or Idris Elba and Gabrielle Union in the Tyler Perry-directed film Daddy's Little Girls. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of channels with thousands more movies and TV shows available on live and on demand. Download the free Pluto TV app on all your favorite devices and start streaming now. Pluto TV. Drop in. Watch free.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.